Kingston Town can't win.
Bone Crusher and our Waverley Star, stride for stride.
Cometh the hour, cometh the legend, Winks has done it.
Joined on the podcast now by ex-professional runner and now widely renowned as one of the great sporting and racing personalities, Jason Richardson. Richo, thanks for joining us.
Former professional runner, that's a long, long time ago. Black and white before either of you were born, I reckon.
So usually it's yourself asking the questions. Today we're asking you, how do you go on the other side of the microphone? Do you enjoy it or not so much?
No, I prefer to do your role as opposed to talking about myself. And that would surprise many people who think I absolutely love chatting about myself. But this will be a labour of love because I love talking about A, racing, and B, the Cox Plate. What an unbelievable race. So I keep calling it the best 2 minutes in sport. Michael Brow keeps ignoring that as a slogan, but I reckon it is the best 2 minutes of sport.
I think
we should, yeah. Maybe. Yeah. It's brilliant.
So we're going to go off kilter a bit and start with your running career firstly. How did that begin for you as a kid, and when did you know you were kind of pretty good at what you were doing?
I think growing up I wanted to do, there was three dreams in my life. One, I would have loved to have been an AFL player and played to a reasonable level, A grade amateurs, tried out for some AFL clubs, good as a junior, but didn't make the next transition. So I wanted to be an AFL player, I wasn't good enough there. I also wanted to be a 100 metre runner at the Olympic Games. Lucky enough to win a store gift on the way through and lived the dream of being a professional athlete for 5 or 6 years. Travelled around the world, raced the best athletes in the world. I was training partner with Kathy Freeman. That was absolutely brilliant. And the third thing I wanted to do, so I failed at the first two miserably, and the other thing I wanted to do was be a commentator, and I idolised Bruce McAvaney, and now I have the great privilege and pleasure of every week chatting to him and working with him. It is unbelievable. I'll never be Bruce McAvaney, but love working with him. So that was my ambition growing up. They were the three things I wanted to do. Sucked at two and hang out with Bruce for three.
Got pretty close to the second one.
So 1993, you mentioned the store gift win, off 7.5 metres. What are your memories from the day and that weekend?
They're still so vivid, it's hard to believe because it's such a long time ago. And Neil Kearney interviewed me after I won the store gift, and that seems like just yesterday, and I still see Neil occasionally, which is fantastic. Memories of nerves, you know, if I could only go back, I'd risk not winning anything to go back and live it again, because it's just so fantastic to be A, in that sort of physical shape. I mean, I was only new in my career and, you know, I ran a lot faster after that. But then that's the race that people often refer to here in Australia. But great memories, the nerves, you know, not able to sleep. How am I going to handle the pressure? Because the reality is you only get one opportunity to win the store gift. It's a little like the Melbourne Cup. You know, the fact that the Melbourne Cup's from a handicap point of view, you want to get in at the right weight in the Melbourne Cup. You want to get in to the right mark for the store gift from 0 to 10. That's the most you can get is 10. I was new to it, so I was given 7, which in effect ended up being a luxury. So great memories, and also to share it with all your training mates and, you know, a betting plunge, you know, 40 to 1 into 10 to 1 on and all that sort of stuff. Absolutely brilliant. I go back each and every year as part of my role with Channel 7, and I love the event. It's so uniquely Australian, you know, when you look at it, we're running these elite athletes running on a footy oval, various, you know, staggered starts where the whole idea is everyone goes across the line together. The betting involved, you know, you've got to win your heat to get into the semi-finals, you've got to win your semi-final on the Monday, and then 2 hours later you've got to handle the pressure to win the race that defines you as an athlete. So great memories.
And you mentioned the betting there briefly. What's it like, that betting on course? And you mentioned a plunge. Was that how it unfolded for you on the day?
That's how it did for me. I mean, it's a lot different now. We probably only have 4 or 5 bookies. Back when I won it, we had probably, you know, 10 to 15. But then years before me, in the 1960s, when Bill Howard was going back-to-back, there was 40 bookmakers. It was like the ring at Moonee Valley or at Flemington. Huge heaving bookmakers, and, you know, the people who are able to be good enough and talented enough to win a store gift back in the 1960s were winning enough money on the punt to be able to buy a house. Very different now, still a unique event, and the betting side of it with corporate bookmakers, a bit like racing's changed a fair bit, but I think that's my official betting fluctuations. I think 40 to 1 was thrown up at one stage, and I reckon in the final I was about 1 to 10.
Did you have a piece of yourself?
Just something small. Just something minute. But my training partners did, more importantly.
Yeah.
And how did winning the gift and some of your other achievements as a runner help with your career today?
It's interesting. I don't think it's hurt at all. I think I got used to being involved in the media as a result of it. And I think the number one thing when I'm working, say, in Olympic Games, Commonwealth Games for Seven, which I'm so privileged to do, I get a fair bit of commentary about my interviews with athletes, and I think it's more that I understand what they've been going through. So I understand the highs, and I think even with, you know, with racing, I celebrate the highs because I know how bloody hard it is. And also I really commiserate with the lows because, you know, in isolation, at the absolute elite level, I look at my athletic career and see nothing but lows as opposed to highs. So I see how hard it is to get to the absolute top. To run an Olympic Games for an Australian is so unique and it's so rare. So when I have Aussie athletes walking over towards me who have come seventh in Olympic final and they're in tears, I'm there saying, but you've got to be so proud of where you're at, and trying to get our audience to understand the story. And I love the stories of sport. That's what I'm, you know, intoxicated with. So all the stories about the athlete is what I try to emphasise, because I love that side of it, of giving, making it human, that these guys and girls are not robots. So like in racing, it's the stories behind the scenes. So maybe having experienced it and tried and failed to be an Olympic gold medalist, maybe that helps me in my career, yeah.
And racing, do you remember when you fell in love with racing as a sport?
Guess what? My grandmother, God love her, passed away a long time ago. She opened a betting account for me at 9 years of age. Now, gamble responsibly, everyone. She opened a TAB account for me. I'll never forget it. And every Saturday when I was down in Tassie, I was born in Tassie, but I left when I was only 4 months old. But every school holidays, we would go to Tasmania for our school holidays, go and see the extended family. So I had great uncles. One was a horse trainer. One was a horse owner. I had heaps of uncles who were jockeys. And basically, the moment we arrived in Tassie for all of our school holidays, we spent the whole time talking or going to the races. So I fell in love with it for a long time. I learnt the vernacular. I'd stand at Elwick and, you know, Uncle Kelvin would walk, be riding past in the parade ring, and you'd be yelling out to all of them. And then I'd get to the 200-metre mark, and as they were running down the straight in Tassie, I'd race them, but I would be running next to them. So I fell in love with it at such an early age. And I love the stories. You know, that's what makes it Cox Plate so unique is, I think it's the one race where you can remember the race caller. And I grew up in an era where my dad would talk all about, you know, Dulcify in 1979, booting away and winning by 5, 6, 7 lengths, and then Kingston Town and the stories around that. I mean, I fell in love with this great race here, but I fell in love with racing through A, my family, and then B, once again, the stories.
So someone like me inspiring to be in racing media, you might...
I think you've done a good job, mate. You're in it. Welcome. Welcome.
You're obviously the benchmark. You might not want to admit it, but what are some of those things? Did you get training back in the day? Who was it with? Or, how have you developed yourself over time?
It's interesting. One thing I would say to young media people who are desperate to get into it is, people will open up the door for you. Just stride through that door and just own it. Believe in your own ability. Believe it or not, I got my start in such a lucky way. As an athlete, I was interviewed a lot, and I felt like I didn't have any formal training, but I felt like the fact that I was watching racing or watching the Olympics or watching footy and pretending in the backyard by calling all the action, a bit like Matt Hill did, I felt like I was training all the way through my youth. But I worked in marketing for Oakley Sunglasses back at the 2000 Olympics, and I just retired from track and field. I was training partner of Kath Freeman. Kath, you guys weren't born. Kath Freeman was the favourite and the poster girl for the Sydney Olympics in 2000. I was working in marketing for Oakley, and we had a hospitality house at North Bondi RSL. I paid them $40,000 to the diggers and said, can I take over this house and turn it into a hospitality house for athletes? spoke to a good mate of mine, Matthew White, who's been a brilliant TV host over many, many years. He was hosting a show called Sports Tonight. And I said to him, you guys should come and set up here and I'll get all the athletes in because you don't have the rights. Channel 7 have got the rights. You're at Channel 10. I'll bring the athletes in. All of our contracted athletes will come here, eat, sleep and drink and talk all great things about the athletes. You can do some great interviews. He said, good idea. I'll bring the producer down. I'm taking them through it. And the producer out of the blue says, do me a favour, pretend you are interviewing Matt White. So I went, what do you mean? He goes, just pretend you're interviewing. So I start interviewing Matty White in a fun way. And he said, you know what? We won't bring a reporter down. We'll bring a camera down and you can do it. So believe it or not, I got my shot in the media at the 2000 Olympics doing live crosses to Sports Tonight, which was unbelievable. And I was just chatting to mates of mine, whether it be Kyle Van der Kuyt, 110 hurdler, or the awesome foursome, or Addo Bolden just got a medal in the 100 metres from Trinidad and Tobago. We would do these one-on-one interviews and they would go on Sports Tonight. And then it just sort of started from there.
You've obviously been very versatile, TV, radio, different sports. Are there some key memories or moments for you that stand out from, you know, Olympics to racing to footy? What's some, you know, two or three key moments there that live in your memory bank?
God, I'm so lucky in racing, haven't I? I sound like I'm retiring. It sounds like a retirement speech. I lived through the Black Caviar era, so she was perfect, 25 from 25, and I... You know, it's bloody annoying that I look back, I do not have a single photo of myself interviewing Luke Nolan. And I reckon I did it 10 or 12 times throughout her 25. And I don't have a single memory of it. It really annoys me because I was so privileged to be there throughout that. I was privileged to be there when Winks won 4 and between Bruce and I, whether we'd be interviewing Huey or Chris, and they're so generous with their time, or Deb Kapitas or Chrissy Bowman. So they're great memories. In racing, they're hard to beat. The Melbourne Cup's just a fantastic race. So, you know, there's so many memories. It's impossible to separate those. But right here at the Valley, it's Black Caviar and then it's Winks. And also that unique flavour and feeling that you get at a Cox Plate, how close you are to the action. That's always right in the back of my mind. From Olympic Games, I mean, I've just finished 12 months where I've done a Summer Olympic Games in lockdown into a Winter Olympic Games in lockdown into a Commonwealth Games out of lockdown in Birmingham. Full of great memories, whether it be, you know, freezing at minus 30 on the top of a mountain in Beijing, or, you know, in lockdown, stuck in a hotel room, but then coming out each morning to go to the Olympic Games in Tokyo, and you're there for the men's and women's 100 metres and you look around and it's an empty stadium apart from athletes, and then dealing with the emotion of all the Australian athletes, the highs if it's Nicola McDermott, to the lows of poor Jen Lacaze snapping an Achilles in a last jump in a steeplechase, and then just standing in front of me and bawling her eyes out into the Australian public. That just broke our heart, mate. How are you now?
Yeah, I mean, it's raw. It's hard. I'm not okay yet, but I will be. I haven't spoken to many people, so that's why I'm a bit vulnerable right now, but I'll be happy soon.
It's impossible to separate any of them, but they're the ones that come straight to mind.
So the Ladbrokes Cox Plate, we think it's Australia's best race. What are the initial thoughts that come to mind for you for the Cox Plate?
Well, I just think it's so unique that, I mean, you think about the 2 minutes, but also think about how close the crowd is to when the horses parade, then the horses walk through the tunnel. How close you can get to the action, whether it be horse flesh, jockeys. Then they parade down the straight. They start in front of the crowd. That's unique. There's no other course where they start in front of the crowd. Even the Caulfield Cup, it's way away from the main part of the crowd. Start in front of the crowd, run past the crowd for the first time before then they disappear out the back. But then when I think about the Cox Plate, I just think about the stories that my dad taught me so much about. I mean, I mentioned Dulcify. Kingston Town from 1980, when he was this precocious 3-year-old, 4-year-old from Sydney who didn't handle Caulfield at all, to then Bill Collins saying when he just trotted up behind them, we're going to see the real one today, and then he sprinted away for a famous victory. His second one when Ronnie Quinton got caught in a pocket and then bullocked his way in and got a suspension but got a win, and then Peter Cook jumping on, Kingston Town can't win, and then he gets up the champ. So straight away, when you're growing up with that, into Strawberry Road, into Rubiton, into the race of the century and Bone Crusher and Our Waverley Star and Bill Collins saying Bone Crusher races into equine immortality, you think about that era of the 80s, how incredible it was, into the 90s with Better Loosen Up, who I can remember I was down the beach with my mates all sitting around listening to the car radio, and we'd all put what we thought was a huge amount of money on Better Loosen Up and cheering home Better Loosen Up when they were strung out because Stylish Century was off and away, and Better Loosen Up storming down the outside. And then, you know, into the 90s, into 2000, we think about, you know, Sunline, we think about the great Kiwis that have won the race, and then into the Winx era. It's a race like no other, because each and every year you sort of remember a certain snippet of it. And I've missed two of the great ones. I've missed, you know, Might and Power, when Brian Martin says, you know, the earth begins to rumble. Straight away, people, you say that saying, people go, Cox Plate, Might and Power. For me, you know, being in the outer there wearing a singlet and a T-shirts with my cap back to front, light smear of baby oil on, watching Superimpose win the Cox Plate in the most dramatic Cox Plate, which with Naturalism falling and Let's Elope, the old champ, and Better Loosen Up on the inside, and there down the outside comes an 8-year-old in Superimpose. How bloody good's this race, eh?
Absolutely. No, I think you've just summarised 100 years of history of the Cox Plate in about a minute, so fantastic. This might be a tough question to ask, but one race day or one moment for the Cox Plate, is there one that sticks out for you above the rest?
Well, Superimpose is my favourite win, but that's in an era where I was just a racing fan with your mates, and they're special because that's where you really, really develop the love for it. And, you know, when you're hanging with your schoolmates and you're watching, you know, a great race and you all have a bet, and I mean, they're very special. But then you morph into your working life. You know, you think about, I mean, Winx is just impossible to go past, isn't she? I mean, her four in a row was incredible. But then I think, I mean, maybe because I was on him for such a long way out, you know, for weeks, months leading into weeks, talking about State of Rest and thinking about the drama of last year and thinking about the fact that people couldn't get on course like we couldn't when Sir Dragonette was able to win. We had a few more people on course last year, but then we had the nonsense of being locked out of the protest hearing and me peering through the bloody blinds and saying to our cameraman with our producer going, what are you doing? And cameraman, come and peer, have a look through this. And we're looking through the blinds to try to find out what the reaction's going to be and who's going to get the decision. I mean, the drama involved in that was unbelievable. I was on State of Rest from a long way out, and then I'm working with Bruce McAvaney and Hamish McLaughlin, Dean Lester, are all Team Animo, and the arguments and discussions that we were having, and then all the drama involved there, and then, you know, the Cox Plates goes to the Irish. So, once again, I've absolutely avoided the answer and avoided one, and I've given you another 10.
Oh, that's fantastic. We've always talked about here how good it would have been last year with 30,000 people here with that drama. It would have been just a melting pot here of just, yeah. It would have been, yeah. So,
and I would have loved to have had our cameras and our audio in there.
Yeah.
You know, that discussion between Craig Williams, who is like Judge Judy, he's brilliant. He would have just been absolutely amazing. And then the representatives of Joseph O'Brien and John Allen, where I reckon the stewards can't understand a single word they're saying. That drama would have been hilarious, listening to them, the way they're debating. So, what a great Cox Plate. I was just reliving it out there before we have a luncheon today. And brilliant Cox Plate. And then at the time, everyone said, you know, all the media commentators, oh, you know, this is a poor Cox Plate. Really? Mm-hmm. Very elegant, runs third, comes out and brains him in a Melbourne Cup. State of Rest goes and wins another Group 1. You know, he's one of the unique horses who's won a Group 1 in four different countries. You know, great race. Animo is now the most successful Group 1 Godolphin horse in Australian racing history. It was a fair race last year.
Fair race.
I remember actually straight after the race, she came past me and said, dismiss. And I thought, it's dismiss. And then I looked at the replay, I'm like, this might be a bit closer than we first thought.
Was that me talking through my pocket, Ben?
Yeah, I think so.
Dismiss, dismiss. Pay out. Well, that's the beauty of the protest, pay out.
You're also well known, obviously, for your tipping. You do Richo's Ruffy segment on Seven, and you go pretty well with it. What are some of your greatest memories on the punt?
Oh, is this going anywhere? Should I declare this? My greatest memory, and I've actually said it before, my greatest memory on the punt was I'm privileged to be friends with the Williams family, so know Lloyd, but in particular Nick, really well. And each and every year, a number of years ago, for TVN before racing.com, I would convince them that it'd be a good idea if I come up with a camera grand final week and then showcase all their horses back when they were bringing 30 horses out from Europe, showcase all their horses and give everyone a bit of an idea as to where those horses would go. And I'll never forget it the year, and you'll remember the year, I'm not great with dates, exactly what year it was, but we paraded a horse through the water and he came out and he looked absolutely magnificent. And his name was Seville. And I said to the Williams team, oh, he's going to run in the Turnbull Stakes. They said, actually, no, we're going to send him to Sydney and run in the Metropolitan. I think he'll run in the Metropolitan. Faulkner makes its way through the water as well and he looked incredible. And oh, this is your Epsom horse up to Sydney. Actually, no, we're thinking of going towards a Caulfield Cup with him. And I'll never forget, I went up and had a bet at the Macedon TAB, believe it or not, and backed Seville, who was 50-1 for the Metropolitan, and Faulkner was about 60-1 in the Caulfield Cup. Backed them individually, backed them all together as well, and they both won in a beautiful moment for Richo fans, all two of them. That's my great, man. That's my number one tipping result. I've had a lot of luck in the Melbourne Cup with some long priced horses. You know, Cross Counter comes to mind, Rekindling, which was about the third or fourth ranked of the Williams runners, but got onto this early. The English 3-year olds coming out to Australia, I thought that was really important. So, State of Rest last year was good to me. It was hard when the champ wins all the time in Winx, and I probably a little like Black Caviar because I'm a punter and I'm always looking for ones that are over the odds. And in hindsight, she was over the odds if she was $1.70, wasn't she? But I'm always looking for long price ones, so I'm always going against the champ. So if the champ wins, it's not a great result for me financially, but I'm still cheering, you know, I'm still having a great time with the owners because I know how bloody hard it is to win. Absolutely.
And this year's Cox Plate, it's shaping up to be a bit of a fascinating one.
Mm.
Your tip about 3 weeks out from the race?
Well, my tip 2 months out, because I was lucky enough to go to Europe at the end of the Commonwealth Games. So I went straight down to Newmarket and caught up with James Ferguson, who's got the favourite for the Melbourne Cup in Deauville Legend. And he's also got a runner who will be transferred over to Chris Waller. His name is El Bodegon. Saw him and he looked a fantastic Cox Plate horse, really small in stature, 420 kilos, two-time Group 1 winner in France. And then I saw him run in the French Derby. He was defeated there by three and a bit lengths by a horse called Vedeni. Vedeni was runner-up in the Arc last week, won the Coral Eclipse against the older horses in Europe and then went and should have won the Irish Champion Stakes. Really, really good form reference. Third in that race, behind El Bodegon, is a horse called Modern Games. He went to America and absolutely donkey-licked them in the sort of race that State of Rest won. He won easily in a Group 1 race. El Bodegon's defeated him. Ernesto was further down. Ernesto ran second in the Irish Champion Stakes, had a crack at the Arc. This is a good group of European three-year-olds. He was $67. He's not regarded as an international because he's been transferred to Chris Waller. Whatever beats him will win the Cox Plate.
There you go. Well, we better get to lunch. Richo, thank you for your time.
Absolute pleasure.
Thanks for the Spring Carnival.
Good on you,
thanks,
guys.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.